Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
The best part of the hunting season is finally here. We've waited for this all year long. Now let's make it count with some great gear from our partners. First up, Tacticam is our title sponsor, and their point of view cameras are my go-to method for filming my hunts. Their new 6.0 camera has added a 1-inch LCD touchscreen that has totally changed the game for me. Its lightweight design, weatherproof housing, and one-touch operation really simplify the self-filming process and make sure that I have high-quality footage to share with my family and friends. My personal favorite for archery season is two 6.0 cameras, one on a stabilizer mount on my bow and one on a bendy clamp mount for an over-the-shoulder angle. And I pair this with a Tacticam remote so I can turn both cameras on with the push of a single button. To learn more or pick up your 6.0 today, head over to Tacticam.com. Share your hunt with Tacticam. Now, as the temps begin to drop, I know I'll be hunting in comfort with my Huntworth camo. Huntworth is making high-quality, technical hunting clothing at a fraction of the price of other brands. This time of year, I'm making sure to layer smart. I start with a set of base layers, either the Casper or the Bangor, which I have found to be very comfortable and moisture-wicking. Next, I'll have on either my Elkins midweight top and bottom or my Saskatoon heavyweight top and bottom. Either way, I'm also going to be bringing my Saskatoon vest. And because the hunting often gets better when the weather turns nasty this time of year, the Winstead rain suit lives in my hickory pack all the time. And I can honestly say that this is the best rain suit that I have ever used. You can learn more or grab your Huntworth gear today at huntworthgear.com. And finally, the Onyx Hunt app is an absolutely indispensable tool for me this time of year. If I'm not in the action, I'm going to be making a move to go find it. And the Onyx Hunt app helps me identify those terrain features that I want to key in on with their latest aerial imagery additions. The app now has fully functional 3D on both iOS and Android, low-resolution satellite images updated every 2 weeks with historic look back, and leaf-off imagery, all in addition to the base maps that you've always had in the app. Get more out of your maps this season and know where you stand with the Onyx Hunt app. Now let's get into this week's show.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Tacticam. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State. Folks, this week, we are trying something new here. We're going to do a little cold open. I've got Mr. Jeff Hintz on the line. Jeff, how are we doing?
I'm doing great.
Excellent, man. I'm happy to have you on here. So this is kind of a unique situation, right? So you and I met this past weekend. So folks listening to this, this would be two weekends ago. You and I met at the BHA Northern Icebreaker, that whole banquet over in Fort Atkinson at Koshkonong Mounds Country Club last weekend. Ended up sitting together at the same table for dinner. Didn't really realize it at the time, but essentially what we ended up doing with the BHA guys was I spoke with Matt, as you heard, and you know, all the ads for the last couple of weeks. We decided it might be a good idea. Why don't we, as one of the raffle prizes, we can raffle off a guest slot on an episode. See what we can do there. So we were starting to do that. About halfway through, Matt decided to call an audible and thought, hey, we'll live auction this thing off. How about that? And I was like, well, I mean, if there's tags in there or raffle tickets, then I don't know, but we'll see and all that. And so what we ended up doing was going up, we live auctioned the episode off, pulled out two tickets. Matt asked who had the tickets in there. Your hand was one of the ones that shot up. So I was immediately like, oh, cool. I was sitting 5 feet away from, you know, 10 seconds ago. And so we decided to do that. Earn some money for the BHA in the process, and then you're here as our I'm blanking on the word here, geez, our esteemed guest. Not right.
Okay. Yeah.
And so basically you and I started chatting about how we were going to do this, what we wanted to talk about, kind of bounced some ideas around, ended up talking turkey hunting more than anything, didn't we? But so we're going to dive into a couple things here. Our primary focus is going to be on, you know, mentoring in the outdoor space and, you know, finding mentors, being a mentor, stuff like that. You serve on the Conservation Congress for the state of Wisconsin as well. We'll get to all of that. But first off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of just where you're from, some of your outdoor interests, maybe how long you've been hunting, fishing, pursuing all things outdoors?
Sure. I'm from Waukesha County. I was born and raised in Pewaukee on a small farm. Both my parents grew up on dairy farms in northern Wisconsin. My dad had 11 siblings, and my mom had four. So very large families. Mm-hmm. I actually have 61 first cousins.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's a big group. But I have one sister. We grew up on that small farm. My dad came from poverty. They had it pretty rough when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when I was a kid, my grandparents still used an outhouse and heated their house with wood and cooked on a wood stove. So.
No kidding.
I'm 58 now, so I mean, you know, this is 50 years ago. But mm-hmm. Most of my relatives hunt and fish, and his brothers and sisters did it, you know, to feed the family, mm-hmm. Besides farming. So my dad was my main mentor. We spent a lot of time in the outdoors together. And so that's kind of where I come from. you know, so I've been hunting. I started deer hunting when I was 11, which at that time was illegal, but my birthday's in November, right in the middle of deer season.
Count it.
So, yeah, my dad and my uncle, you know, filled up the license and put my birth date in September instead of November so I could go with them.
That's awesome.
And
was this hunting around Milwaukee, or was this hunting up north?
No, we hunted in the Wausau area.
Okay,
you know,
got it.
On family land up there.
Sure, sure. Awesome.
So that's how that all kind of started. So, and that's back in the day when we had party tags. You know, where you had to have a group of three people would send in, and you may draw a doe permit. That's kind of how that worked then.
Right.
And
so were you guys running full on, you know, big family deer camps up there? And
actually, no, you know, some of my family, extended family did that, but for me, it was mainly my uncle, my dad, and myself.
Got it.
And,
very cool.
You know, we would get together with family in the evenings and that type of thing, but the three of us kind of did our own thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So is it more so you guys were the main hunters, or you were you just had your own sort of style of hunting compared to the rest of the family?
Yeah, exactly. We just kind of, I mean, the rest of the family, they all hunt.
Sure.
And we did too. We just didn't join in with them. Once in a while, we'd do a big deer drive
okay.
with a group, but usually sure. it was just the three of us.
Got it. Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So then when you're down in Pewaukee, are you able to hunt and, you know, pursue game and stuff out there as well, or down there?
Absolutely. We, Sundays after church was always rabbit hunting.
Okay.
And,
I like
you know,
that.
In the winter. So we did a lot of that. And, my dad would send me off with a 22, do a little squirrel hunting whenever there was time to do that type of thing. And my dad raised Labradors.
Mm-hmm.
So, he raised them and trained them, and he was a waterfowler too. So,
excellent.
Did quite a bit of that. And back in those days, we actually had wild pheasants in the state.
Yeah.
There was a few left around. So sometimes he'd tell me just to take one of the labs and see if how many pheasants I could flush up, you know, walking around fence lines and that type of thing.
Sure.
So
awesome.
My uncle had a farm also, and we kind of farmed together, and they would have me go down. My dad had a single shot Mossberg 22, and when I was a kid, they'd have me sit between the grain bin and the machine shed, and there was about a 4-foot gap in there, and they'd tell me to go down there and shoot the rats when they'd run between back and forth. But you know, that was a really good lesson, because I learned how to time those rats running back and forth, and that became
right.
a pretty good shot, you know.
Yeah, so, I believe it.
Yeah.
Especially with the single shot, man. And I mean, that's, those rats don't tend to be too slow.
No. Yeah, they zip back and forth pretty good. But yeah, it's kind of a fond memory of when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, and at the time I was like, man, I'll never hit one of these things. But after a while I started getting a little better at it.
Sure. Sure. Like anything. Yeah, you just gotta practice and figure it out. So then
yeah.
Did you guys end up doing any deer hunting or anything down near Pewaukee, or was that primarily a Northwoods thing?
Yeah, it was mainly up north.
Okay,
yeah,
got it.
My dad would during the week sometimes in between, you know, while I was in school, but on the weekend, you know, those two weekends during gun deer season, we'd head up north.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm curious, as you're learning stuff then, and as you're kind of figuring things out and, you know, taking things step by step, you know, as an outdoorsman, looking up to your dad and grandpa, what were some of those, some of those aha moments, or some of those big, you know, when something clicked, right? what were some of those moments that you had as you were kind of figuring stuff out? Because I think it's, you know, everybody, I reflect back as you're, I listen to you talk about, you know, shooting rats, you know, running back and forth. You know, I remember being 7 or 8 years old, and I mean, we practically didn't even need the recycling bin because I was out in the backyard shooting, you know, tin cans, you know, as any free time I had, I was out there shooting them. And, you know, it's stuff like that where you kind of experiment and you're like, oh, wait, that actually worked. Interesting. All right. What were some of those moments that you had?
I mean, some of the things I remember most, once I learned to duck hunt on the Mississippi River out of Ferryville.
Okay,
and, sure. So I was 12 or 13, and we had a bigger boat that we'd pull a 14-foot John boat. We'd stay on the Iowa side and then go across the main channel to the Wisconsin side.
Okay.
We're back on these islands, and I don't recall what it was, but my dad needed something out of our vehicle, and he told me to take that 14-foot boat with that 5-horse Johnson and go by myself. And he said, just watch out for the barges coming down the river. And
yeah.
I really learned to respect the water after that day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, boy, you're just like a tiny little sailboat out, paper boat out there on that big river, you know?
Right.
And I don't know how many people would go on the main channel on a 14-foot John boat nowadays, but, you know, back then, oh, that's a 14-foot boat. That's pretty decent size.
Right.
Not anymore. You know, and, I really enjoyed small game hunting by myself, mm-hmm. and to be able to just lean up against a tree and watch for squirrels and learn to be quiet and you know, be observant.
Right.
And I really remember that stuff from being a kid, and mm-hmm. that really carried over into big game.
Yeah.
You know, being able to sit for, you know, 6-8 hours in a stand, and don't really do much anymore. I'm not that type of, I can't do that, but I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I really drifted over to waterfowl as I got older, and I just pretty much have always had Labradors and enjoyed training those dogs and enjoyed the camaraderie of being with other people in a blind.
Absolutely.
And still hunting alone.
Hunting
alone once in a while too is great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess that's kind of things I picked up on.
Sure. It's interesting you say that about small game hunting, because we've talked about it in a number of different lights here over the past couple of weeks, or months, I guess we should say it. You know, and just how, you know, as hunter numbers are declining, so are small game hunting numbers or hunter numbers within that, right? There's fewer and fewer small game hunters out there these days. But, you know, I've listened to, you know, chatted with a number of people who grew up small game hunting. And, you know, I was listening to an interview with, I believe it was Tony Peterson, where he said that his dad wouldn't let him deer hunt until he had graduated from small game hunting. And that was his, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, his schooling or his training as a woodsman was, you know, being able to hit a small target like that, being able to sit still long enough, like you said, and, you know, just kind of absorb the woods and absorb all the sounds and all the little things that you pick up on, whether you're conscious of it or not. Man, that's, I love that you said that, because that's something that I think just in general, more and more people are starting to miss out on. And that's something that, especially at a young age, when you are just kind of like a sponge, you know, you start to be able to discern, like, oh, you know what, that sounded like a squirrel, but I don't think that was, that might've actually been a deer. It sounded a little heavier than a squirrel, or, you know, vice versa, whatever it may be. When did the transition to waterfowl start to occur?
Well, I mean, I did as a kid with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was going to be a senior in high school, my family moved to Colorado. So we lived there for 3 years, and I didn't really hunt when I lived there, which a lot of missed opportunity, but I did fish, but I didn't hunt. And then I moved to California for a year, and I came back to Wisconsin. And friends of mine were pretty big into waterfowl hunting. And shortly after that, my dad passed away, and he had a Labrador at that time. So my mom asked me if I wanted her. So I went out to California and picked that dog up and brought it back. And kind of, I guess the rest is history. You know, I just fell in love with waterfowl hunting and the dogs and the smell of the marsh and the whole thing. You know, I still deer hunted pretty heavily at that time, and I bow hunted too, but I slowly drifted away from that and I really got into the waterfowl. The other thing that really turned me over was I have four kids, and as they were growing up, it's difficult for me to be able to take them all deer hunting, but it wasn't difficult to take them waterfowl hunting.
Right.
I could take all four if I wanted, or two at a time, or, you know, I could field hunt with them. And that made a big difference too. That was a big change, because I was able to do it with them, where it's because I didn't own any big tracts of land. So it's kind of difficult to say, hey, you mind if I bring two or three of my kids along deer hunting? You know, it's kind of a tough thing.
Right.
So that was a big change too.
Sure. Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that. That's a great point. A really great point. So you're what, like early 20s when you get this dog?
Yeah. 23.
And bring it back over. Okay. 23. Awesome. Yep. Got it. And so then, are you, everything's staying around, I guess most of your waterfowl hunting is kind of staying down in that southeast corner of the state then, or are you starting to
range
a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the trips to North Dakota started, and then two trips to North Dakota per year. And yeah, started venturing out. Yeah, the majority of it was southeast Wisconsin, Watertown area. And now I have a place in Adams County, so I hunt the Wisconsin River up there too.
Okay, excellent. Very, very cool. Yeah. So it's kind of cool then you're able to kind of transition from what it sounds like, at least, you know, you've got this kind of family lineage of mentorship in the outdoors, right? Like your dad and your grandpa kind of taught you how to, you know, the ropes and showed you how things were, and then you were able to pass that on. And how young were you getting the kids out in the marsh with you?
Pretty young. 7, 8 years old, they started going.
Cool.
You know, I pushed them pretty good. That's one thing I've learned. That not everybody's as passionate as you may be when it comes to whatever your pursuit is.
Sure.
So, you know, as they got older, I got a little pushback, but now that they're all adults, we still hunt together.
Cool.
So it worked out well.
Good.
And friends of mine friends of mine have kids same age as mine, and they mentored their kids differently than I did.
How so?
They, like, if their child was like, yeah, I don't really feel like going today, a lot of times they wouldn't show up, you know, and I was always surprised, like, wow, really, you just didn't bring them along, you know? And now when I talk to my kids and they're like, yeah, dad, we tell you like three times, we really didn't feel like going, but you just kept pushing, you know? So, but you know, it all worked out.
Right.
Both ways. But, you know, I guess if I did it over again, I'd probably look at that a little closer.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I'm sure too, there's a learning curve with anything, right? So I'm sure there's a learning curve with, you know, figuring out as you're hunting, you know, solo and without, you know, then
when you start adding kids to the mix as well, and okay, like who's, you know, are they bundled up enough? Like, are they, you know, where are they at? Keeping track of them alone, I imagine, is, you know, enough of a chore as well. But no, that's really cool. And so I'm curious then, so it sounds like you had kind of just this mindset shift over the years. How has your mindset shifted, I guess, over the years, kind of from like, you know, point A, learning to hunt through your, you know, 20s, 30s, and so on to kind of where you're at now?
Well, that's a really good question. And there's a really good book that can answer a lot of that. It's called The Hunter by Dr. Bob Norton.
Write that down.
It goes through, and he's actually from Wisconsin, and it goes through the stages of being a hunter.
Okay.
And I'm not going to go through all the stages, but like when you start, you just want to harvest something. You mm-hmm. want to get something. You don't care what it is. It, you know, a spike buck. And as you progress, and not everybody progresses through all of the stages, mm-hmm. but you know, you get to the point where now it's numbers. You want a limited ducks every time you go out. If you don't get a limited ducks, you're not happy. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you get to the point where it's about trophies. You know, you want 15-inch spread or bigger, or you let them go, you know, that type of thing. And then you get to the point where I'm probably at now, where you're just happy to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hear a turkey gobble when I go turkey hunting, I'm good with that.
Right.
I mean, I still have to drive, but it's not like that I have to harvest.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of where I'm at now. And I appreciate when I can hunt with my children or anyone else that wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really, really enjoy introducing new people. I've done learn to hunt turkeys with a few adults and some kids. I've mm-hmm. done youth hunts with all of my kids, of course, and sure. I've taken their friends. It's just, I really enjoy doing that.
Right.
And how you met my girlfriend, Karen, and she comes from an outdoor background, but she never hunted.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got together, and now I've been careful because I don't want to push too hard. And she's engulfed herself into this hunting game now too. So it's been good. And I think that's a good lesson, you know, not to push too hard. Let the person decide on their own.
Right.
You know, how far they want to go with it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's well, I guess first off, since you mentioned Karen, we can't do this episode without real quick touching on the fact that you both, when we were at dinner, said that you never win anything in these raffles. And you two, we were standing at the same table together, man, and you would have thought our table had bought half the tickets in that joint, because holy smokes, you guys were on fire.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous. I mean, I've been to a lot. I used to do, you know, DU banquets and Wisconsin Waterfowl Association and NWTF, which I'm a huge supporter of, and, you know, spent way more than I've ever won,
right?
Which is fine. I mean, it's all for a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we ended up, we did very well.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I did actually turn back one of the tip-ups because we won three in a row, and I'm like, someone else has to win. You know? So I felt guilty, you know?
Right.
But yeah, you know, now we'll probably go to 10 more banquets and won't win a thing. So
yeah,
you know, it all works out
again. Absolutely. Yeah, man. That was just hilarious. Cause like right literally like 20 minutes before we went in, we never win anything. Who cares? It's all for a good cause, whatever. But and then like I think I came in late and my girlfriend's like, hey, they won. They got a Yeti. And it's like, oh, cool. All right. Like, next thing was hilarious. That was, man, that was just a fun banquet. I got to just take a quick minute to thank all the members of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and staff at Koshkonong Mountains Country Club for putting on such an awesome event, because that really was a blast. And, you know, it's the camaraderie there, obviously. You know, we're sitting here chatting here still. I mean, that was just second to none. That was a great, great event. You know, circling back to you mentoring others and getting people you know, into it. How have you gotten involved with that on, I guess, to scale? Because you've helped out with some of the BHA Learn to Hunt weekends and stuff, haven't you?
Yeah. Alec Becker's last year was looking for mentors for their Learn to Hunt turkey. Mm-hmm. So I signed up for that. I just want to say, BHA is probably one of my favorite conservation organizations right now. And the main reason is the youth that's in it. I mean, a lot of the organizations now are people my age and older.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really worried about that. We're going to age out. And to BHA, everything I've been to, it's a lot of younger men and women, and it's great, and they're ready to work. I've had them helping me with a couple of projects already, so I try to give back as much as I can to that organization, and you know, they're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But that turkey hunt, I ended up taking out a gentleman that he lives here now, but he was born and raised in South Africa, and took him out, and we were lucky enough to harvest a bird, which was, it was really cool. It was
right.
Fun. So, yeah.
How did that, it sounds like there's a story behind that. How did that all go down as he got his first bird? Did you call one through the timber? Was it a field one coming and working decoys?
Well, we started on the edge of a field. It was all on public land in Covermarine State Forest.
Awesome.
And we started on the edge of the field. My preferred tactic is run and gun. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, with somebody new, I would rather start, especially in the dark, just sitting.
Right.
And we had birds working us. And there was a group, I don't know, it was maybe four or five toms and a few jakes chasing some hens on some private land. And we were working them in towards us. And they were off to our left. And I had told him just kind of slide over easy to the left. And he moved kind of quick. And one of the jakes saw us. And, you know, that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had another spot picked out. So we went over there and we did some walking and calling, running and gunning, and we struck up a bird. He's pretty far away, and so we kept kind of working towards him, and we came up on it was probably a 2-acre field on the edge of the woods, which I was like, oh, we have to sit here for a little bit, see what happens. I mean, this is like prime. You can't ask for anything, right? So we sat down, and we weren't sitting 5 minutes, and a hen came out and was walking right towards us. You know, and I whispered to him, just keep your eye out. There could be a tom following her.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my slate, and I just heard just like three hers, you know, three, just one stroke slate, and a bird gobbled to our right behind us.
Oh.
So I kind of look over my shoulder, and here's a tom at probably 70 yards in full strut. And he's behind us, though, and the hen's in front of us. So the hen's kind of heading towards him. So I'm trying to stop her with a little bit of yelping and putting. And she stops and she's looking. And that Tom worked his way out just far enough that he could get a shot. And that was the end of that. So, but I mean, it worked out great. If he hadn't gobbled to that little bit of a purr I made, we would have never known he was there.
Right.
We were watching the field, you know.
Oh, yeah,
he gave himself up. So, yeah.
What a great story for a first bird. That is so cool.
And, you know, and he got a good show in the morning with birds gobbling and fly down and strutting. And so, yeah, it worked out well.
Oh, man. You can't ask for anything better than that.
No, not really.
You got just enough of it. You know, you got busted, so you had that little bit of a little bit of struggle in there too, and then you get to walk around and strike one up, man. That literally could not have gone any better. That is so cool. Good for you guys,
I took a guy out that I worked with that moved here from North Dakota. He was a younger guy. I took him on a farm nearby Sussex here.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't out a half hour, and Tom walks out right into the decoys, and he shoots that bird. And I'm like, man, you didn't get a show. You didn't hear cows. You didn't get anything. So he actually asked if he could come out the next morning just to see if we could, you know, get one to come in.
Get one fired up.
Yeah. So we went out the next morning again. But
That's so cool, man. That's so cool. And so is that something you're hoping on, or obviously trying to kill, you know, get another bird to work in just like that and give someone a phenomenal first hunt? Will you be mentoring again with BHA this year?
Yeah, actually, I just got the email yesterday.
Oh, cool.
From Alec.
Awesome.
So, yeah, he's looking for guys again. So
excellent.
And he is looking for people. So anyone around the, you know, Waukesha County area, he's looking for mentors.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're doing another, we're doing, I think, two, at least learn to hunt weekends for turkey this year. I think we're doing one over by you guys and another one over in the Driftless with Tony Cordero. I think he's leading the charge on that one. So wherever folks are at in the state, if you're willing to travel a little bit, or you might not have to, it's a great opportunity to learn and a great opportunity to get your first bird on the ground.
Yeah, for sure.
That's super cool. So I'm curious, as you've been mentoring others and like helping, you know, new hunters get into it and figure things out, have there been any moments where you've kind of been like almost catching yourself or kind of reflecting back on like, oh man, I remember when I, you know, made that mistake, or I remember like, you know, thinking they're having this misconception, whatever it may be. Is there any of those things that have stuck out?
Oh, happens all the time. It's fun. It's fun to watch, you know. I've really been seeing it the last couple of years with my girlfriend, Karen, and she's been going waterfowl hunting. And I mean, I just this couple months ago in the late season goose, we had a lot of geese flying, but they were all heading to another field. And, you know, she's like, why aren't you calling? You know, we should be calling these birds. And it's kind of like, yeah, I remember being hoarse calling so much and, you know, flagging to these geese. And it's like, they're all going to the same spot, you know?
Right.
So, but, you know, you have to humor them too. I like to, if they can call, say, go ahead, go for it. Just call your heart out, you know?
Right.
Or turkeys, you know, I've had it where, you know, it's extremely rare that once a turkey goes past you, he's going to come back. They usually keep going.
Right.
You know, and it's like, well, I think we can call him back in. So, well, go for it. You know, you got your call. Give it a try and see what happens, you know, because I don't know how many times I've seen that where, you know, they walk by out of range and they just keep right on going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. I've seen a lot of that.
Right. But at the same time, though, I mean, when you're figuring stuff out and you're learning, especially that when you get that first bird to respond, even if you're just, hacking away at a slate call or something like that, like when you get that first little, cluck that you just kind of punched into your slate and, one sounds off 150 yards away, you're like, whoa, okay, I can do this. No way. Like it's, I mean, that's the reinforcement you need. That's why, I don't know, man. That's, we talk about it a lot on this show about how turkey hunting is like, it is neck and neck with whitetail hunting. And obviously it depends on the year, but like every year that goes by, man, it seems like turkeys just get a little bit further ahead. And I don't know if it's just the weather or the communication with them or what exactly it is. I mean, it's different, totally different game than deer hunting, obviously, but man, is it ever fun. I'm just getting fired
Well,
up now.
I know. I love turkey hunting. I mean, when all my kids were at home, we were up there scouting before season. Then we'd be up there for the youth hunt, and then we'd always try to separate our tags out through the whole season. So we'd be up there every weekend,
Right.
But I really, we were talking about small game and what you learn in that, and how that leads into big game. And I really think turkey hunting is very similar to hunting. People might laugh, but moose or elk, when they're in rut, use the same tactics. You really do. I mean, get in front of the bird or get in front of the animal or find out where they're hanging out and work them in. I mean, it's very similar, in my opinion. I moose hunted in Alberta once, and I just was so astonished with how similar it seemed to me. You know, you make a cow call, or you make a bull moose call, and that moose calls back to you. It's just like talking to a turkey, except it's way bigger. I elk hunt. My son lives in Colorado, and he's a mountain hunter, and I elk hunted with him and for first rifle, and they were still bugling. So, we used a lot of the same tactics we learned turkey hunting.
That's so cool, man. I remember, so I haven't turkey hunted for that long. I think it was 2020 was the first time my buddy Logan took me out and kind of showed me the ropes, and we struck up a couple birds, and just couldn't get it done or anything that morning. But I remember going back. I was living down in Illinois at the time, still in school, and I remember going back home, and I went to the archery range that was nearby us, and I was chatting with some guys who were shooting as well, and I was like, yeah, dude, I went turkey hunting for the first time ever. And like, I didn't realize that when those things gobble at 50 yards, like it rattles your rib cage, and you feel that percussion and everything. And like, dude, that like made my heart race like nothing else. And the guy just looked at me and he goes, you ever heard an elk bugle at like 80 yards? And I was like, no. And he goes, dude, you'll pee your pants.
Yeah.
It is unlike anything else.
Yeah, it'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Turkeys do that to me too, and I've been hunting them since the early 90s. You know, when you didn't get a tag every year and it closed at noon, and your tag was only good for 5 days instead of seven like it is now. And you hear that bird gobble, it's like, wow, there's one here, I got an opportunity, you know. So I think a lot of that stuff carries over, you know.
Definitely. What has I'm curious too, because we had a great time hanging out with you and Karen while we were at the banquet, and talking about turkey hunting and some of her first hunts and turkeys and stuff like that. And she'd mentioned that she was she did a lot of outdoor photography and stuff, and that first bird came in and it was nicely lit and all strutted up, and she was like, dang it, I wish I had my camera. What has that
kind of process looked like for you guys as you've kind of introduced her to that?
Well, I'll first mention that something I've learned from her. And I learned, from a lot of the people I've mentored that she sees things, details that I've passed up my whole life.
Interesting.
Like you can see it in her photography, like there'll be a tiny bug on a flower and she'll take that picture because she saw that bug on that flower. And I've learned to slow down a little bit and kind of look for the details
Right.
while I'm hunting, and so that's something I've picked up from her. Her transition from shooting with a camera to using a firearm as at first she was like, I don't know if I can do this. And so, and I was totally fine. I think she was worried that I'd be upset if she couldn't pull the trigger. And
Right.
really, like I say, the stage I'm at really doesn't matter. I mean, if you can't, you can. I'm fine with that. My oldest daughter, the first time she duck hunted, she had a duck fly in and land in the decoy zone. When the kids were out for their first year, I would let them shoot a bird if it was sitting on the water, but once they did that, they had to shoot them flying. That was
Right.
kind of my thing, She couldn't do it, and I was like, okay, it's fine. I mean, in the back of my head at that time, I was really upset, but it was like, well, I can't show her that I'm upset, right?
Right. Right.
That changed, though. I mean, sooner or later, she missed a few birds, and then she's like, okay, now I really want to get one,
Right.
So, but I mean, your question was how she transitioned from photography into hunting. I mean, she does really well because a lot of the stuff in photography really carries over. You gotta sit still. If you want to get a good shot, you gotta wait for it. The light, or more for her, the lighting was important, but
Right.
concealment. Concealment's important. So what I, she's picked it up pretty easily.
Sure. That's super cool. Really,
And
really cool.
she's a lot tougher than I thought too. She can really take the cold weather, which I was surprised for someone new in the game, But
That's awesome. That's so cool, man. Yeah, it was. I mean, we were shoot. You and I were talking turkeys. I think, Karen and my girlfriend were, they were, swapping recipes and stuff like that, and talking about turkey. Well, I think they ended up talking turkey hunting as well. That's super cool, man. I love just. I mean, I think it's just fascinating to hear what everyone's experience is like. Getting into things and then also sharing it with someone else, and what did they learn through teaching someone else, right? Because I mean, you always hear the saying, like, if you want to really understand something, you need to be able to teach it, or try teaching it, I guess, and that kind of stuff. And it's really cool that you guys have been able to hit it off as much as you have, and share that time out in the field and all that. It's been really cool to see. You mentioned before we started recording, this was actually one of the first things that you mentioned when we were talking at dinner. You've had some involvement with the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. And so, can you? I want to make sure I don't want to misspeak into what the experience is. I know you served on the board, and I know you were involved heavily with the board, or with the board, or I guess with the Congress. For a number of years as well. Could you kind of shed some light on your experience with the Conservation Congress and your involvement with them?
Sure. I'm a Waukesha County delegate now. I was elected in 2020, so I haven't been on the Congress very long. It was a 2 year, you can either do a 3 year or 2 year. I was elected for 2 years, but then because of COVID, everything got pushed until this year. So I'm up for election this year. But I've been involved with it. I was on and off up until like 2000. And in 2000, some people remember the morning, they'll call it the morning dove vote. It's when there was a proposal to have a morning dove hunt in Wisconsin. So it went through the Congress for public input. And that's mainly what the Congress is for. It's so that the people of Wisconsin can voice their opinions on natural resources issues. And we're the only state in the country that has this.
Really?
Yes, and it's very unique, and it's been around, I think this is like the 88th or 89th year, somewhere in there. Don't quote me. I know it's in the upper 80s. And people can write their own resolutions or proposals of what how they think that the DNR should handle different situations, and they go through a process, and if the public in your county thinks it's a good idea, then it'll get sent to a committee, and if the committee thinks it's a good idea, the following year it'll be on the state ballot, and then the whole state can kind of vote on it, and then from there that will get pushed to the DNR to say, hey, here's what the people think, and then final decisions can be made. So yeah, after 2000, because big group of us all got together and went, and that was like a record year for attendance.
Yeah,
and it was really something.
Didn't they have to rent out the Coliseum in Madison instead of some like high school auditorium like they normally do?
I know they use this. We have this small Coliseum in Waukesha County, and it was packed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was full. It was crazy. And I was like, this is really something. And I haven't missed one since. You know, sometimes some years there'd only be 10 or 15 people there, but other years there'll be, you know, a couple hundred.
Sure.
I just think it's a great opportunity for citizens to voice their opinion.
Right.
I mean, and then there's committees. I don't know how many committees there are all together. I'm on the migratory committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll take like citizen resolutions and decide which way we should go with that type of thing. And we work hand in hand with the state biologist, Taylor Finger, and we voice our opinions on rule changes and things of that nature to do with migratory. Some of the things will get passed through and they end up having to go through legislation in order to become law. Mm-hmm. One good example is sandhill cranes. Yep. It's a very controversial subject, but everything is there scientific-wise and citizen-wise for us to begin a hunt, but it has to be passed through our legislatures in order to become law. And the best thing citizens can do, I'm just throwing this out there, is to call their representatives and say, hey, if you're in favor of it or you're not in favor of it, to say, hey, I believe we should have a sandhill crane hunt, or if you believe you shouldn't. But they're not going to pick it up unless they hear from citizens.
Right.
That's just kind of how that works. I actually have a resolution. Go ahead.
No, I was just, well, you continue. I've got mine written down here.
Well, I have a resolution that's sitting at my state rep's desk. It's been sitting there for a few years because she can't, it's passed through the Congress procedure actually twice. Someone else wrote one very similar a few years before I wrote mine.
Mm-hmm.
But she can't drum up enough support from other representatives in order to try to put it on a bill. And, you know, there's people that are obviously are in favor of it, and I keep putting the word out, hey, you got to call your representatives and tell them you believe this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, they don't know what to do with it.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, man. So I'm sitting here, my wheels are spinning because I just last week spoke with Paul Annear about the proposed doe hunting ban in the Northern Forest region, right? And so my wheels are spinning like crazy right now, thinking like, okay, seems like if folks are really against this, and I don't know if it's because it's already been proposed as a bill, how that would work. If it's beyond this stage of being able to call your representative to let them know, what you think and stuff like that, to,
Oh,
either be in favor or.
absolutely not. So this is the time to call
Okay,
them for sure.
got
Yeah.
it. Where can folks find their representative?
You can just type it in, you Google it. How
All
do
right.
I find my Wisconsin representative? And everything will come up and it'll ask, where you live, and it'll pop up your let or your state rep and your senators will come up, and you can just email them. I
Got
mean,
it.
I email mine quite often on
Sure.
different issues. The last one was on the Pelican River. I let my senator and rep know that I was 100% in favor of the purchase of that, and they let me know, hey, okay, thanks for letting us know. There used to be Joel Clayfish used to be a representative. He isn't anymore. His wife was actually the lieutenant governor under Governor Walker, and he's a big sportsman, big goose hunter and duck hunter and all that kind of stuff. And he said if 10 people would contact him on an issue, it was a lot. So
Really?
that's how few people it takes to say, hey, there's interest in this or
Right.
disapprove of this. So few people will contact their reps, and I mean they're representing you. So you let them know how you feel, and it can definitely make a difference.
Right. That's fascinating, man. I mean, something that, I'm not particularly well versed in. Doesn't sound like a whole lot of people are, if nobody or if not many people are calling in. But I think, what you said here about being able to, just find your state representative, online and send him an email to voice your opinion on different matters and stuff. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling that 10 is considered a lot for something like this for an entire state, right? And I get that, it's, what your area's representative, but
Right.
man, that if anything, that just highlights how powerful just sending an email really can be, especially with all of
It is.
the topics of contention we have, right now with, a lot of different conservation stuff, whether it be, a doe ban or what have you. I mean, I'm obviously my brain's a little bit more geared towards deer and more deer focused on the
Yeah.
management side of that. But what are some other issues that you're seeing, in the Congress that are kind of going on in just like a number of different realms, whether it be migratory or upland or turkeys, what have you?
Well, we see a lot with wolves,
Okay, sure.
for and against. That's a pretty hot topic. It has been recently. We see quite a bit of trapping. There's some people that, and that's another nice thing about, the Congress is you can actually tell people, this is what the law is, because there's a lot of misconceptions that, how things work, and trapping is a hot topic
Totally.
that way. There's some stuff with bear that you see pop up quite often. And then, like fishing, most of the fishing stuff is just you know, size limits, slot limits,
sure.
that type of thing,
mm-hmm.
individual lakes. And, you know, so I would say, you know, that type of thing.
Got it.
And you do see environmental things too, because we cover all that too, you know, with the chemicals in our waters and that type of thing.
Right.
I would like to mention, since we're on the Conservation Congress, that there's also a Youth Conservation Congress. And to me, my opinion, it's the highlight of the Congress. They have, right now, they have 49 delegates, so they're under 18 to become a youth delegate. And they're in 26 counties right now. And the way it works, so let's say there was a youth in Waukesha County. They need a mentor, so it'd be one of the five of us that are delegates for the Congress of Waukesha County would pick up this youth as a mentor. We'd be their mentor. And they do
interesting
all kinds of projects.
Huh.
They do hunting and fishing. They'll learn fly tying. They do, we have the Waterfowl Expo up in Oshkosh that we've run for the last 2 years, and they volunteer at that and just do a fantastic job. And last year, all the graduates, the ones that turned 18 and left high school, all but one went into college for an environmental field.
Awesome.
And the one that didn't became a fishing guide in northern Wisconsin right out of high school.
Fitting.
So every graduating youth delegate went into conservation.
That's so cool.
It's an excellent program.
That's so cool. I can't believe, even, you know, whether it be youth or just the Conservation Congress as a whole, I can't believe that Wisconsin is the only state in the country that has this.
Yeah, and there's actually a youth delegate that graduated, and she's going to college in Montana, and she's trying to get it started there.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like if any state, I'm surprised Montana or some of these Western states, I'm surprised that there's not one already. I get, you know, fewer people, but still, I mean, that's a, you know, when you think about, you know, those Western states, those big game, you know, outdoor recreation states, and you have hunting, fish and stuff like that. I mean, those are the ones that come to mind. It just goes to show you how much we got going on in Wisconsin. And as you mentioned that, you know, they're one of them, you know, or some of the events that the Youth Conservation Congress is putting on and stuff with the fly tying and the, you know, waterfowl expos and stuff like that. I mean, we really are kind of spoiled here in Wisconsin with how much we have access to and how much just incredible opportunity there is to recreate. And I mean, it goes to show too. I mean, it's a precious resource, and it's something that, looking forward now, right? You know, it's something that needs to be protected and needs to be, you know, managed accordingly. So, you know, getting involved, and, you know, I hope if anything, folks, one, I mean, like, I hope hearing your experience on the Conservation Committee, I hope folks feel compelled to send that email, and I hope they feel compelled to reach out to their representatives and, you know, just make their voices heard. I mean, I'm certainly, quite frankly, I just haven't known how. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, a lot of people don't. I mean, I didn't. I learned a lot of it through the Congress, you know, how to, well, here, this is what you need to do if you want this to pass, you know. And unfortunately, my resolution hasn't yet, but we're still working on it. If we can, if we can drum up enough support, it'll go to a vote on the floor, and we'll see what happens.
Absolutely.
Now, that's not every resolution. A lot of the resolutions, the DNR can change the rule or add a rule or whatever, but some of them have to go through the state.
Interesting.
And don't ask me how they determine which ones do, because I'm really not sure. Unfortunately, I don't have the answer.
Man, you cut me off before I could. I was literally just about to say, like,
I wish I knew, but I don't.
Interesting. Huh. I wonder if it has, I'm not going to try and speculate. I have absolutely no clue. You would know better than I would. Yeah. That's really, really interesting, man. I love hearing about that. And I hope folks listening to this have at least written down to Google their state representative and figure out who they're, you know, who it is that's representing them individually. And, you know, hopefully they save that contact info or something. As far as the Conservation Congress goes, how do folks go about finding where their local, I guess, meetings will be
or are held? If you go on the DNR website and just type in Conservation Congress, and there'll be a drop down of everything you want to know, of who your delegates are, who's on what committee, when, you know, the spring hearings this year, it's going back to what it was before. I'm going to look up the date. It'll be on April 8th in every county.
Every county. Got it.
Every county will be on April 8th. And you can go and listen. There'll be people from the DNR. There'll be your county delegates will be there.
Mm-hmm.
You can vote there or make your opinion there on the resolutions, or you can also do it online, which will open, I believe, on the 9th or 10th.
Okay.
And it's open for like 5 days or something like that.
Got it.
But all that information is just, you go on the DNR website and type in Conservation Congress and everything will be there.
That's phenomenal. Folks, I really hope you just wrote that down. I hope you put that in your calendar, and I hope you've got some opinions that you're ready to vocalize, whether they, regardless, I guess, whatever, it's a free country, regardless of what they are. Man, that's cool. It's funny you mentioned that that 2000, the dove hunting hearing, I guess. I'm a fly casting instructor at a fishing school over in, kind of actually not too far from you. One of my students that I had in that a few years, I think it was 2 years ago now, was actually the gentleman who spearheaded that whole dove hunting, the whole push to have the dove hunt and all that. And it was just a fascinating story about, basically, up in Wausau, they had all the, like, a dove farm, or, you know, multiple, I think, and they would ship the doves down to Illinois, where there was a legal dove season. And he would go down there, and he and his buddies would, they'd give each other crap here and there, you know, after a day of hunting. And one of his buddies was messing with him and said, "Yeah, you know, thanks for raising all these birds for us. It's a shame you can't hunt them by you, huh?" And the guy said, "Yeah, tell you what, I'm blanking on the amount, but it was either $1 or $2. But he bet his buddies each like $2 that he would get a dove hunt in Wisconsin. And sure enough, like a year and a half later, that was that huge hearing that you said there. And it was quite the event from what I've heard.
You know, it was very controversial. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the end, the first couple of years, the harvest was, it wasn't high. It was a good, you know, a good amount of harvest, and it's mm-hmm. gotten lower and lower every year since.
Right.
And it's just participation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of stuff going on September 1st when dove season opens. So there's not a huge interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I think the proponents of it were worried that we were going to wipe out the dove population and whatnot. And it's kind of the same thing with the sandhill crane set. You know, people are worried that we're going to decimate the population, and they're just not understanding how highly regulated it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Once there is a season, I try to get that word out as much as I can to non-hunters, because I think cranes are awesome too. But
yeah,
we have a sustainable population, and we can hunt them, and we're mm-hmm. not gonna wipe them out.
Right.
It'll be, you know, limited tags, and limited people are going to get them.
Right.
You know, to begin with. So.
Absolutely.
We'll see. Fascinating. We'll see how it goes.
Right.
That's another one that's been, it's been years in the making.
Really?
Oh yeah. It's been going on for a long time, trying to get a sandhill crane hunt. It's probably been through the Congress, I'm going to say, four times already, and it's been approved every single time. And but it has to go through legislation to become law. So that's where it's sitting.
Got it. And that is, and that
there's a lot
of, I was gonna say, is that what happens to a lot of things, that they get to legislation and they just kind of sit, and they just haven't had the, like, will they, is it the type of thing where they'll get to it eventually, or do some things just sit?
It's that it doesn't, they're not hearing enough support, and they're hearing more for people that don't support it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that don't support it are very vocal, and mm-hmm. hunters as a whole are not very vocal people.
Right.
So that's why it's sitting.
Got it.
Because, you know, the representatives represent their people, and if they get more people telling them that we don't want this, then, you know, it's going to sit.
Huh.
I believe last year, and I'm not 100% sure, I'd have to look it up, but I think there were two senators that wanted to take it up, but they couldn't build enough support. So it's just sitting.
Dang.
Yeah.
Huh.
I think one of the biggest issues is, people that are against it are worried about our whooping crane population.
Yeah.
And
like a misidentification kind of thing, or?
Yeah. There's a lot to be said about that back and forth. Mm-hmm. So it's been said that a whooping crane has never been shot during a legal season by a hunter. But now, I know last year, I don't know if it was in Oklahoma or Texas, there were three that were shot and left away. And I don't know the whole details on that, but that's a big concern. That
right.
Whooping cranes. I know the cranes that are in our state are an experimental project.
Mm-hmm.
They were brought in, and they're doing pretty well. Actually, back to Karen, she actually got a picture of two adults and a colt at Horicon Marsh last year.
Oh, no kidding.
That colt did not survive to adulthood.
Oh.
It ended up dying, and they did a necropsy on it, and it had some kind of bacteria or something that succumbed to. But yeah, she got some pictures of that, so that was kind of cool.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool. Huh. Have you recruited Karen to film any of your hunts?
Well, actually, that, you know, you're asking.
I just thought of it.
That's actually how it all started. Her family, her and her siblings have a cabin up in Eagle River area on mm-hmm. a lake. And she invited me, hey, why don't you come up and if you want to try a duck hunt? And I was like, yeah, okay. And she's like, well, you mind if I come along with my camera? So that's where it all started.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's how that started. And actually, it was kind of cool. A quick little story. There wasn't much flying, and there was some common mergansers circling the lake. And I mean, I'm not a huge fan of mergansers as far as table fare.
Mm-hmm.
I usually put them in the smoker, and then they're pretty decent. But
sure.
The other thing too is they're a pretty tough bird, and they can dive very well. So if yeah. you wound one, you're usually off to the races. So
right.
I usually don't target them. But I was like, hey, she's never been out duck hunting. These birds are circling. So I ended up dropping one. And earlier in the day, we had seen this eagle perched up in a tree off to our left. And as my dog's swimming out to retrieve this merganser, out of the corner of my eye, I see the eagle coming. And he's down low. He's heading for that bird.
No way.
And I told Karen, I said, listen, if he's getting close to the bird, I'm going to shoot up in the air. Not, obviously not at the eagle, just mm-hmm. to spook it away. She actually got pictures of that eagle coming down with his talons out, wanting to get that bird just before I spooked it.
No way.
Yeah. So she has some pictures of that.
That's so cool. What are the odds, man?
I've actually had that happen more than once.
Have you?
With the eagles, yeah. I guess on the East Coast, they target where people are duck hunting.
Uh-huh.
And they hear the shots, and they come in, and they'll steal birds that are dead on the water.
Really?
So they can retrieve them, yeah. So.
That's so yeah. cool, man. I'm going to have you send me one of those pictures just to see it. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the odds, man?
I'll ever dig that up.
That's so cool. Well, man, we've been going for like an hour and a half or so now, getting close to it already. It feels
yeah, sure.
time flies and all that. I don't want to take up too much of your evening here. But, man, I want to thank you a ton for coming on, for your interest in coming on the show. For your involvement with the Conservation Congress and mentorship and BHA. I want to thank, you know, BHA for, I mean, creating the environment, you know, and just fostering the camaraderie that it does, you know. I mean, we wouldn't be here talking to each other today if it weren't for BHA and, you know, just be, and I mean, regardless of if we were, you know, this podcast were around or not, I mean, I can guarantee you and I would have found a way to start talking turkeys by the end, you know, just like we did. Right. And just,
right.
You know, there's so few places these days and so few groups that, you know, you can really meet new people who share these common values and common goals and stuff. So I would encourage everyone listening, if you're not already, become a BHA member, regardless of where you're at. You know, attend some of these events. The board members are an absolute riot. The people there are an absolute riot. I promise you, you will have fun. Jeff, before we wrap up, is there anything left you got?
Oh, I have all kinds of stuff, but
we might have to get you back on, man.
I really appreciate the opportunity. I didn't really know how it would go, but it's very enjoyable. I enjoy getting the word out, and like you say, BHA is just they've helped me with. I do a river cleanup on the Wisconsin River, and they jumped in and helped me with that, mm-hmm. along with some other organizations. And they're very grassroots, and they're ready to get down and work. And they're great,
right?
And yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And like I said, man, just all the work that you do and that you've done in your lifetime for conservation and through mentoring people and getting folks, you know, into the sport, whatever it may be, really just getting people outside, man. I mean, you're doing a heck of a job. I'm glad our paths crossed.
I don't think this will be the last time we have you on. I'll preface the future with that, but at the very least, man, we'll be in touch. Turkey season's coming up. Hopefully we can, I might have to snag a zone 2 tag and see if I can make it out your way. I'll see if we can put something down or not, or at least you know, maybe end up mentoring some turkey hunters together or something through BHA. Who knows?
For sure.
But Jeff, for sure. I really appreciate your time, man. I appreciate your interest and coming on the show and just all the support there. And we'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you. That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram at the Wisconsin Sportsman Pod. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions that you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners Tacticam, Huntworth, and Onyx. Please go support the brands that support this show, and if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.